Chapter 60 Sarvo waited until the door had closed behind his secretary before he spoke. "I have read your report, and I find it deeply disturbing." Shaw did not answer, for no answer was required. He looked across the desk at the Prime Minister. The man looked older in person than he appeared on camera. What struck Shaw were the sadness in the eyes and the gloves on the hands. Though he was aware of Sarva's injuries, it still looked odd to see a man working at a desk wearing gloves. "You've made very grave accusations against Mr. Vion, none of which are backed up with hard evidence." "I'm not the devil's advocate, Prime Minister. I've only presented the facts as I know them." "Why do you come to me with this?"
"I thought you should be aware of it. General Sims shared my view."
"I see." Sarvo was silent for a moment. "Are you certain this Foss Gly worked for Vion?"
"There is no doubt of it."
Sarvo sank back in his chair. "You would have done me a greater service by forgetting this thing." A look of surprise came over Shaw's face.
"Sir?"
"Henri Vion is no longer a member of my cabinet, and this Gly fellow, you say, is dead." Shaw did not immediately answer, and Sarvo took advantage of his hesitation to continue. "Your hired assassin theory is vague and obscure, to say the least, based on nothing but conversation. There isn't enough circumstantial evidence here to prompt even a preliminary investigation." Shaw gave Sarvo his best withering stare. "General Sims is of a mind that with a little more digging you may find that the infamous Mr. Gly was the mastermind behind your air crash and the recent demise of Premier Guerrier. Yes, the man was no doubt capable of—" Sarvo stopped in mid-sentence. His eyes widened and his face tensed. He leaned across the desk. "What was that? What did you imply?" His voice was stunned, demanding. "Henri Vion had the motive for wanting you and Guerrier dead, and he, I've proved to my satisfaction anyway, employed a known killer. I admit that 2 and 2 don't necessarily add up to 4, but in this case even 3 may be an acceptable answer." "What you and General Sims are suggesting is repugnant," Sarva said in hoarse indignation. "Canadian ministers do not go around murdering one another to attain higher office." Shaw saw that any further argument was fruitless. "I'm sorry I can't offer you more precise information."
"So am I," said Sarva, his manner quickly becoming cool again.
"I'm not convinced a blunder by you or one of your people didn't cause that nasty mess with the Americans on the St. Lawrence. And now you're trying to cover up by throwing the blame on someone else." Shaw felt his anger rising.
"I assure you, Prime Minister, that is not the case."
Sarva stared at Shaw steadily. "Nations are not run on probabilities, Mr. Shaw. Please thank General Sims and tell him to consider the matter dropped. And while you're at it, please inform him I see no reason to pursue the North American treaty business." Shaw sat astounded.
"But, sir, if the Americans find a treaty copy, they can—"
"They won't," Sarva cut him short. "Good day, Mr. Shaw." His hands balled into fists. Shaw got up and wordlessly left the room. As soon as the door latch clicked, Sarva picked up the phone and dialed a number on his private line. 40 minutes later, Commissioner Harold Finn of the Mounties entered the room. He was an unimpressive little man in rumpled clothes, the sort who is lost in a crowd or melts in with the furniture during a party. His charcoal hair was parted down the middle and contrasted with bushy white eyebrows.
"I'm sorry to have gotten you over here on such short notice," Sarva apologized.
"No problem," Finn said stonily. He took a chair and began fishing through a briefcase. Sarva didn't waste time.
"What are your findings?"
Finn unhinged a pair of reading glasses and held them in front of his eyes as he scanned a pair of opened folders.
"I have the file on the autopsy and a report on Jean Boucher."
"The man who discovered Jules Guerrier's body?"
"Yes, Guerrier's bodyguard chauffeur.
He found the remains when he went to wake the Premier in the morning. The coroner's report states that Guerrier died sometime between 9 and 10 the previous evening. The autopsy was unable to turn up a specific cause of death."
Surely they must have some idea. A variety of factors, said Finn, none conclusive. Jules Guerrier was one step away from the grave. According to the forensic pathologist who conducted the autopsy, he was suffering from emphysema, gallstones, arteriosclerosis. The latter is what probably killed him. Rheumatoid arthritis and cancer of the prostate gland. Finn looked up and smiled thinly. It was a miracle the man lived as long as he did. So Jules died a natural death. He had a good excuse for it. What about this Jean Boucher? Finn read from the report. Comes from a solid family. Good education. No record of arrests and nothing to indicate an interest in radical causes. Wife and two children, both girls who are married to honest wage earners. Boucher was hired by Guerrier in May of 62. As far as we can determine, he was completely loyal to the Premier. Do you have any reason to suspect foul play? Frankly, no, replied Finn. But the death of a well-known personage demands strict attention to details so that no disputes arise at a later date. This case should have been routine. Unfortunately, Boucher threw a wrench into the gears of the investigation. In what way? He swears Henri Villon visited Guerrier the night in question and was the last man to see the Premier alive. Sarva looked bewildered. That's impossible. Villon made the opening dedication speech at the Performing Arts Center 200 miles away. He was seen by thousands of people. Millions, actually, said Finn. The event was on national television. Could Boucher have murdered Jules and then made up this fairy tale as an alibi? I don't think so. We don't have a shred of evidence that Guerrier was assassinated. The autopsy is clean. Boucher needs no alibi. But his claim that Villon was present in Quebec, what purpose does it serve? None that we can figure, yet his conviction is unshakable. The man was obviously hallucinating, said Sarva. Finn leaned forward in his chair. He isn't insane, Mr. Sarva. That's the catch. Boucher demanded to take truth serum and be placed under hypnosis and given a lie detector test. Finn took a deep breath. We called his bluff, but the results proved conclusively he wasn't bluffing. Boucher was telling the truth. Sarva stared at him speechlessly. I wish I could say the Mounties have all the answers, but we don't, Finn admitted. The house was swept by our laboratory people. With one exception, the only fingerprints they turned up belonged to Guerrier, Boucher, the maid, and the cook. Regrettably, all prints found on the bedroom doorknob were smudged. You mentioned an exception. We found a strange impression from a right index finger on the front door chime. We have yet to identify it. Doesn't prove a thing, said Sarva. It could have been made by a tradesman, a postman, or even one of your people during the investigation. Finn smiled. If that were the case, the computer in our ID section would have a make in 2 seconds or less. No, this is someone we don't have on file. He paused to study a page in the folder. Interestingly enough, we have an approximate time when persons unknown rang the chimes. Guerrier's secretary, a Mrs. Molly Sabin, brought him a bowl of chicken soup to fight off the flu. She arrived around 8:30, punched the chime button, delivered the soup to Boucher, and left. She was wearing gloves, so the next bare finger to come along left a clear impression. Chicken soup, said Sarva, shaking his head. The eternal cure-all. Thanks to Mrs. Sabin, we know that someone approached Guerrier's home sometime after 8:30 of the night he died. If we accept Boucher's word, how could Villon be in two places at once? I haven't a clue. The investigation, is it formally closed? Finn nodded. There was little to be gained by continuing. I want you to reopen it. Finn's only reaction was a marginal lift of one eyebrow. Sir? There may be something to Boucher's story after all, said Sarva. He passed Shaw's report across the desk to Finn. I've just received this from an agent in the British Secret Service. It suggests a connection between Henri Villon and a known killer. See if there is any substance to the possibility. Also, I'd like your people to conduct another autopsy. Finn's other eyebrow came up. Obtaining an exhumation order could prove a messy business. There will be no exhumation order, said Sarva curtly. "I understand, Prime Minister," said Finn, catching Sarva's drift. "The affair will be handled under tight security. I'll personally see to the details." Finn inserted the reports in his briefcase and stood up to leave. "There is one more thing," said Sarva. "Yes, Prime Minister." "How long have you known of my wife's affair with Vion?" Finn's normally inscrutable features took on a pained look. "Well, sir, it came to my attention nearly 2 years ago."
"And you did not come to me?"
"Unless we feel a treasonable act has been committed, it is Mountie policy not to become involved with the domestic privacy of Canadian citizens."
Then he added, "That, of course, includes the Prime Minister and the members of Parliament."
"A sound policy," Sarva said tightly. "Thank you, Commissioner. That will be all, for the moment."